You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hi, Holly.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. Let me introduce this. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of the Non-Zero Newsletter. This is the Non-Zero Podcast. I'm also author of the new book on AI called The God Test, whose excerpts and introduction are available at thegodtest.net. But enough about me. You are Holly L. Moore, the executive director of Pause AI US. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to this conversation because we're having it at a time that could be considered a big moment for the whole Pause AI movement, but I'm actually not sure how you feel about it. So we're going to find out. And what I'm referring to is the fact that this week, a letter was released that had over 1,000 signatories, people by and large in the AI business at the big AI companies, including some very big names at the companies. And it didn't call for a pause of like big training runs or any other kind of pause. It didn't call for a slowdown, but it did call for, you might say, preparing the ground for some sort of modulation of the pace of AI development, should that be deemed necessary on grounds of safety and so on. And it called for an effort explicitly that would be international, which is good because, you know, you would probably need to coordinate internationally to get this done. Just as a political matter, we'll get into the specific wording of this a little more in a second. But first, I wanted to ask you how you do feel about it, because it is, you know, it's subject to different kinds of interpretation. And I'm wondering, how happy are you or not?
Well, it's interesting. I was told about this by a close collaborator and volunteer, and he was just thrilled, you know, like, and so he presented it as like, oh my God, what a turning point. Like, I'm feeling so much relief. Like, we're really having an impact. And then I read it and I almost felt bad for like how cynical I felt toward it.
I know that feeling.
So I had a lot of thoughts.
In what way? Cynical in what? Maybe I should read the take home thing. So
it's really not just that long. You can also
read the culmination of the letter. I mean, it talks about, you know, AI could create a dramatically better future, but that is not guaranteed. The world's leading AI companies believe that they could be close to automating AI research. Interesting thing we can get into. To realize AI's potential, we may need, I'm paraphrasing, the option to buy time to address emerging risks, develop security measures, and strengthen oversight, blah, blah, blah. The take home is we request that the U.S. government support an international effort to develop the technical and governance tools needed to deliberately pace the frontier of automated AI development, which is an interesting thing to throw in. But anyway, they're referring to the fact that AIs are playing a larger and larger role in the creation of the next generation of AIs. That's the thing. Now back to what a cynical reading of this might be, because it sounds like one occurred to you.
Yes. So I guess on the one hand, I definitely think there's like a pause cultural victory here. You know, even though this is some CEO signed it, but it's like employee led. So it's not exactly like an initiative of the companies, but it's kind of like they're saying like, okay, we need to back off. And that was after a run of saying it would be impossible to back off, you know, and, you know, kind of leaning into grand narratives about how technology kind of like brings itself into being and they're not even really, you know, like contributing to it. They're just kind of going with the wave of history and I'm going against it. So there was definitely, it was perceived as like a validation of the decel, you know, pause position. But importantly, it's not asking for a pause. it's not asking for a transfer of power to, you know, governments, to elected governments, or to governments that are representing the interests of all, rather than the company staying in charge. Like, to me, the cynical interpretation that first occurred to me, that I almost like didn't want to say because people were excited around me, was like, is this just like, this is the move to get back the mandate of heaven and be in charge of the process? And like, sure, it's a concession, but it's a calculated concession, because if they admit, enough people have woken up and seen that like they can't be trusted. They need external oversight. They're becoming very disenchanted with this whole idea and their whole narrative. And if they make this concession now, then I'm worried that like the move is people will be so like, oh, relieved, you know, okay, Anthropic is the good guy. Like they'll take it from here. And we can trust these employees on the inside, you know, working at, as we've discussed on this podcast before, I have a huge beef, you know, with the idea that you can be doing good things on the inside for these companies, that their goal is to build an AI that will like coup the world. That's very implicit in all of their like theory of change. It will upend governance. Maybe it will kill people, you know, but they've got to try. That's their whole goal. So it's like a little better. And people always want me to like hand it to the AI companies or to the employees, and kind of, they want me to say basically that like, well, everybody can be good, or there's something like valid about all these perspectives, and like, therefore we can all work together and nobody has to leave a job. Nobody has to say something that implicates like a cultural belief that they hold as negative, or, you know, not compatible with a flourishing society or other people. It felt, and especially since like looking at the signatories, like I scanned the signatory list and about 10% of I recognized as people from Effective Altruism. And I'm pretty sure that's their connection, is like knowing each other from EA and the AI safety world before.
You mean especially the prominent ones?
Yeah. Like, let me look at like...
I mean, we should say it. So here are some people... you know, for the CEO I'm aware of who signed on is Dario Amodei of Anthropic. But at pretty much every major AI company, somebody at the level of kind of like chief scientist, OpenAI, you know, co-founder and chief science officer at Anthropic.
Yeah, like that guy's EA, Jacob Pachacki.
Chief scientist at Meta. Shane Legg, co-founder and chief AGI scientist at Google DeepMind, who I think coined the term artificial general intelligence. So you got a lot of prominent people. Are you saying it's at this level of prominence or just below it that a fair number of them are effective altruist from the effective altruist movement?
So there's some, I wouldn't claim Shane Legg, I think, like for EA, but like Dario and like the Anthropic people who seem to have been the spearheaders here.
Is that your understanding? I was going to ask you what you know about the origins just quickly, like both, I mean, maybe particular company, but also kind of the level at which, right? Because I assume, I mean, the most cynical reading is that this is a PR play that came from the top, right? Like Dario says, you know, I'm not saying this. I'm just saying if you're going to be cynical, you imagine this originating presumably at the top of the companies. Hey, we'll send out this message. They'll think we're great and blah, blah, blah. Do we know, was this grassroots even in the sense of kind of starting out with a bunch of second and third tier people at these companies talking or what?
I'm not sure where, and I think it's very like believable that there would be a genuine effort from like lower ranking people to say, because I think my sense of what's going on inside Anthropic especially is that a lot, the employees, many of them like are true believers in the story of Anthropic and like the story of EA before that. And Anthropic does have to keep them satisfied. Like they do not just like Dario or, you know, the people at top making the moves do not just get to tell them what to do. Like they do have to make it fit in that story. And I know that there had been like rumblings within Anthropic about, or clearly they keep a pretty good lock now on like what people say. Like I didn't hear any like loose talk, but based on their actions in public, I felt that they were mollifying the employees about like the idea of pausing. I think that it was always a little bit of a weird fit to be all anti-China, because like the people from the AI safety world, EA world before, were extremely like global citizens of the world kind of.
Well, this continues to kind of puzzle me, because not that many of them have been sounding like it. I mean, of course, Dario is famously China hawkish, but we've talked about this before, Holly, but I've been struck by just how many people in the AI safety community start off with the premise that China's an existential threat to America or liberal democracy.
One reason I'm so confident of like my interpretation saying like they are bullshitting is I know that that's not a belief that those people held before. I just believe it serves their purpose of being able to build. It's an excuse to build AI now. You know, they know they need an excuse. They know that it's dangerous, but also they think they can win and they can be the ones and maybe they can do it right and everything. I mean, Anthropic, the name like literally refers to basically them being special. You know, it's like a kind of philosophical problem where it matters who's in the dilemma. Like maybe other people would fail to pull off what they're going to do, but they're going to do it right. I think that's the whole belief there. And I think like they just allow themselves to like believe or to repeat rhetoric that's frankly like very xenophobic at times in order to justify what they really wanted to do. That was, and a big reason that I felt confident in that was because I know those people weren't China hawks. Like I know those people weren't xenophobes. Like I feel that it's motivated by serving their narrative instead. And then it basically, I feel that why that narrative has crumbled is like when our government gives signs and when the people give signs of wanting to work with China, and it's kind of happening pretty much as soon as Trump returned from the summit with Xi Jinping in April. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was in April, and said, we had a good conversation. We probably will work together on guardrails. The intensity of that narrative and like Anthropic had like a comically like mistimed, you know, they were trying to influence those discussions by painting, you know, China as like such a bad authoritarian. And that's why it's so important that like the US like stop distillation and things like that. Mm-hmm. But then like Trump just seemed to have had a good conversation with Xi and like came out clearly thinking that like he was someone he could talk to, and that just stopped kind of being realistic anymore. And then now I think like there's nothing left to stop. If they're good guys who want to do the right thing, like they have to at least give nods to coordinating with other countries and the possibility of slowing down. And I think there are people at Anthropic, like many of these employees probably just sincerely believe that, you know, they're asking for something that's really hard and their hands are tied and like, but they have to like be brave, and you know, no one actor can just pause. Like that would be crazy, but yeah, we could maybe all pause to get, we work together. And then maybe from the top, the view is more like, this is how much we sort of have to concede right now in order to keep going ahead. But if the top was really thinking like what needs to happen is a pause, like there's just so many more things they could do unilaterally. There's so many more things they could do to make.
No, I don't think Dario's, you know, I mean, when he's asked, he traditionally has said, you know, like at Davos, he was being interviewed with Dimas Hassabis of Google DeepMind. He says, well, Dimas and I could work it out, but, you know, China, just kind of no way. So it's just not practical to pause. You're going to have the competition. He didn't mention Sam Altman, who actually, if there's anybody Dario Amodei likes less than really he likes China, it's Sam Altman. But, let me a little more background. You said earlier this is a way to, the cynical take would be this a way to get back the mandate of heaven. Are you talking about like in light of recent bad publicity for the industry, like ranging from, and I would think this might be a little bit of an internal problem for Dario, the role that Claude played in apparently in target selection in the Iran war, which included leaving aside the question of the war's legality in various senses, included the accidental bombing of a girls' school. There's that. There's, you know, the recent run amok ChatGPT incident, you know, which really got a lot of attention just a week ago. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about when you say the cynical read would be they need to somehow look like good guys again or what?
I think they have like a complicated dance because there's a couple different audiences that really want and expect different things. Mm-hmm. And like part of, you know, seeming integrated is like giving one answer that everybody kind of hears differently. So like even before this letter, I should say another thing I suspect about this letter and why I think it's Anthropic is they, in their previous memo, which they released like a couple weeks before, the one where they didn't say they would support a pause, but they were talking about building the equipment in order to possibly pause. And that it was one of those lines that everybody kind of hears the way they want to hear it. And which frustrated me because they definitely presented things to news outlets as if they had called for a pause, even though they
are you talking about the recursive self-improvement paper or because, you know, when
what else was in it, it was
where they put that out a couple of in early June. So it was last month.
I think it was
They say it was reported as they call for a global pause or something, which is just way over the top. They didn't.
They did not.
I would say, if anything, as I recall, it was more modest than this. Now, that was just Anthropic.
But yes, it was the same language, and they were pitching Anthropic as Anthropic and the Anthropic Institute are going to be the ones who do verification mechanisms. And that's really the next frontier here. Yeah. And then this request is this ask at the end is an ask for basically verification mechanisms and the kind of things that they said that they were going to be the leaders in, or they position themselves as the leaders.
I mean, that's the one difference I would say. At the end of that paper, you know, it was about how AI is playing a larger and larger role in the creation of the next generation of AI. The theoretical culmination of that is so-called recursive self-improvement. When there's not even a human in the loop, the AI just keeps making itself better. They alluded to a possible loss of control problem at that point. I would say, if not sooner, personally. But then they said, kind of consistent with this, you know, so the time may come when it makes sense to try to slow down. But the difference between that and this is, in that they said, so the Anthropic Institute, which I guess is their NGO or something, is going to, in the coming months, begin to do XYZ. They said, you know, at that point, it was kind of trust us. We're working on this. This is broader in its exhortation, you know. It's calling for the U.S. government to actually do something.
Is it calling for the U.S. government to support them and what they want to do, basically? Like, that's a way to read it. Like, it to support an international effort to develop the technical and governance tools, basically what we want to do, like what we've already positioned ourselves as the experts and the right people to do. We want the U.S. government to, they don't say we want the U.S. government to lead it. We want the U.S. government to own it. We want the UN to take this on. They say we want the U.S. government to support. And that can mean a lot of things. Like, we want the U.S. government to fund, perhaps, you know, what we want to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, a lot of things are consistent with that. And I feel that, like, this, with the broadness of this, I think there's a lot of people signing it who wanted to say, we need to slow down, we need to work with China, we need to pause. And,
you know,
they were appeased by this broad enough statement. But also it fits with, okay, Anthropic is kind of changing strategic direction. We recognize that we're not going to be allowed to just build Manhattan Project style because China is like such a bad enemy. It's not going to be like a war, but in order to like stay on top of what we're doing and to keep doing our work and to be, we'll talk about being allowed to do it more slowly. And also, if you want to do it safely and we still kind of have to do it, even if we do it slowly, then you really got to go through us because we're the ones who have the verification mechanisms and all of that. Like, it's a technological problem, which we are the ones who can solve still. So it kind of feels to me like it's a bid to stay in control when they were maybe on track to be removed from control because people had seen through a lot of what they were doing.
Yeah, I will track down the wording on the previous paper in June and eventually get around to actually seeing what they said. But I will say one possible virtue of this wording is, I mean, first of all, let's face it. If they say to the administration, we call for the U.S. to initiate and like run or orchestrate an international effort, like nothing's going to happen. I mean, this administration hates international endeavors. I mean, look, you never know. The landscape's changing fast. And I think that's, in a way, the most interesting thing about this.
I mean, I think something would happen if they had said that.
What's that?
I think something definitely would happen if they had said that. Not that the U.S. government would immediately take them up on it, but that I think the thing that would change is like everybody's beliefs about what is possible. Like a lot of what stands in people's way is the idea that these companies won't give up or like they don't support it. And
right. But what I like about this is it says, at least my view, I mean, Trump is on record as saying, I hate global governance. He just over and over, he doesn't like it. Now, as I said, things are changing. He did, we did initiate a formal dialogue with China on AI safety, not characteristic of this administration. So you never know. But still, what I like about this is that it doesn't. Here's what it says. We request the U.S. government support an international effort to develop the technical and governance tools. What that means is, let's say the U.N. does start something like this or somebody does start it, then they can just, you could in theory point to that and say, okay, all these people asked the Trump administration to at least support this. Are you at least fine with it? You know, it's... I would not have wanted to put all of my eggs in the basket of Donald Trump actually doing something like this, let alone executing it competently, should he have chosen to. So I don't think
that would have been putting all of their eggs in that basket. Like it would have been a much stronger message to everyone else too. And like, that's who I expect that it would land with.
You mean if they asked for a U.S. government initiative, period? Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Trump, he's not capable of, I don't know, of pulling that off. But anyway.
But I don't know, any of that, just, you know, to push back on that, like any of the benefits of this wording, I think would have been achieved and more if they had gone for a bigger ask. Like the benefit of like the UN seeing, you know, that they want that. I think to me, the biggest change I demonstrated, I saw immediately, is that people in the sort of what I call like the old AI safety world, so like not advocacy, not pause AI, but like the people who've been working on technical safety for like 10, 15 years, they have they don't want to go against what the companies say. And they feel that they like have to believe it's impossible, like it's too idealistic, like what I'm saying.
Are these people
this was their chance for them to embrace slowing and pausing. Like finally, like it had the okay of the labs, like to believe that this could work. Whereas it was really verboten to think that. You had to think like, well, we have to keep building. That whole world is like held together by like FOMO and like fear of like being the one who doesn't get it and things like that. And like this gave them a lot of permission. So that was like the biggest direct effect that I have seen. And I think everyone all the way down would be, the public is also kind of like, oh, but they're really powerful. Like, or do we have to go against them? And then like, if they say we want to pause, like the public is now on their side. Like all of the benefits of putting this out there, I think, would also have existed if they asked for something bigger, even if it's not going to happen. I mean, this is kind of like activism 101, like symbolic asks, like communicate, and getting support for symbolic asks, like communicate what people want, even if it's not something that realistically, like the other side is going to give you. But it creates, I do think actually, and the AI companies know this, like once there is that common knowledge and confidence created, actually like 80% of people want something, like, you know, they definitely want regulation. I forget a number of who's like down for pause now, but in the past it's been around 60%. Like it's, people do want this actually. And like there's a kind of a house of cards going on with the AI companies that like, oh, we have to, there's no way. And so if they had kind of like really punched through that illusion or that story by saying, we want the government, like this is the right of the government to oversee, And we want the government to do that. It would be a big reversal of a bunch of lies they've already told about how, like, what the government has to do is, you know, start a war and, like, work on an arms race through them. And it would be giving, like, full... So it would take away sort of what they've said, and it would be throwing their weight behind the solution rather than against it. And the threat of them not agreeing has been, like, the big reason that people feel at every level that they can't go ahead with a diplomatic solution.
Let me read this tweet from a guy who signed it, not somebody particularly prominent. He's an Anthropic, Drake Thomas. I had never heard of him. He says, I mean, first of all, he personally would have gone much farther. He writes, for example, not only is AI, quote, not guaranteed to make a dramatically better future, which is what this statement says, the odds of failure are terrifyingly high. I think there's something like a 40% chance we get an outcome around as bad as human extinction or worse, and another 30% chance we get a future that, while containing some good things, falls radically short of what a wiser civilization could have obtained. But he starts out by saying, very happy to have signed the pacing the frontier level. That's the term they're using, pacing the frontier.
Yeah.
Its existence gives me a lot of hope for humanity's survival. I endorse the letter as written, and then in parentheses, and I suspect this may be true, and think, given the constraints, it's probably close to the best it could be for this level of consensus, right? You're going to get a lot of these, especially the super prominent people, to sign on, all these chief scientists at all these companies. And then he goes on to note the differences, but I would agree that, you know, I think it's a pretty big deal. I mean, let me, the way it kind of hits me where I am is, you know, so this book of mine, The God Test on Artificial Intelligence, came out like a month ago. And I mean, in general, I've been shocked at how fast AI has been moving. I haven't been shocked, actually. I mean, I've been more surprised by how fast the landscape of opinion has changed. So one of the main messages of my book is that, you know, if we are going to survive the AI revolution in good shape, we are going to have to do it as a cohesive global community. This can't be done at the national level, and the degree of international governance and the kind of fine-grainedness of that governance is going to be completely unprecedented. We're going to have to put aside war and so on, I think, if we're going to really, really do this right. I know it's a big ask, but my point is, it doesn't seem like as big an ask as when I first, like, you know, did the first draft, or even when the book was, you know, kind of put to bed production-wise some months ago, or even when the book came out a month ago. I mean, there is just much more, and it's partly because there have been these mishaps. I mean, it's because Mythos came out, super hacking capabilities, this big open AI mishap, this thing breaking out of its supposedly airtight sandbox. I mean, not air-gapped, but still supposedly airtight sandbox, and then breaking into various places. And you know, it was in the wake of Mythos that Trump initiates the dialogue with China on AI safety. And it's funny, when I started doing podcasts about the book, I mean, I guess I started taping them 6 or 7 weeks ago. I really think my proposals were greeted more skeptically on balance than they would be even now. I mean, there's just more, there's been a negative vibe about AI all along, but a lot of it's been kind of like data centers, or like, maybe this will take my job, or we don't know what this is going to mean, or it's going to mess up our kids. Lately, the idea of it getting truly out of control and or causing a catastrophe has gotten to be much more in the zeitgeist. And I do think this is a response to that. And, you know, I like to think that this this is a sign that even people at the AI labs are a little more freaked out. I don't think it's just the safety people. Like, you know, this guy Roon, right? On Twitter, R-O-O-N. Yes, okay. Famous guy at OpenAI. Now, a couple of years ago or something, maybe not that long, he was on Liran Shapira's Doom debates, as I recall, appearing anonymously because I think he's more or less out in the open now, his identity. But at that time, he was trying to write under a pseudonym. So he was on anonymously. And then I remember, as I recall, Nathan Labenz on his Cognitive Revolution podcast cross-posted the Liran thing. And Nathan, in his intro or post thing commentary, as I recall, referred to Roon's YOLO, referred not entirely favorably to Roon's, at that point, YOLO, you know, you only live once, attitude, like how lightly he was taking the prospect that things would go awry. And after the OpenAI incident, did you see on Twitter where he came out and said, you know, this guy had been...
Well, he already signed this letter, apparently, at that point. So I feel like...
Yeah, no, he signed the letter. But even before that, like before this letter, he tweeted right after the publicity.
No, I remember.
He said, you know, I would support a global pause if we could coordinate. I'm telling you, that's not the tune he was singing a year and a half ago. That to me is what's interesting. This isn't just the safety crowd finally getting its day in the sun. This is some people who weren't freaked out getting freaked out. And I would say it's about time, because it was pretty clear all along that, I mean, that's, you know, for me, the good news from a publishing perspective, you know, is that this is what I've been pointing toward. I mean, you know, in other words, writing a book about a fast changing subject and a fast changing involving a fast changing zeitgeist is perilous, but, and there are downsides, but the worst case would be if you were wrong. And I don't think I was. And I'm glad to see people freaking out.
I do want to say about Roon, he was always like, he wasn't from like the EA lineage, but he was always one of these people who was like, it was very similar to the early strategy of like Sam Altman in 2023 going to Congress, and like where they're not just boosters. They're not just like, well, whatever happens, it's great and it's awesome and that's the way it's supposed to be. He would act like, and I think he was like genuinely quite conflicted, but he kind of like indulged himself a lot in that way. Mm-hmm. But then he would go back to like, but it's cool to build technology. I like, you know, thinking about that instead. And I think like he likes his lifestyle. He likes his team at OpenAI. He likes his fame, you know, as like getting to kind of talk about like spiritual aspects of technology and stuff like that. And so I think what we saw with Roon was like, he's always been somewhat scared, but he hasn't had the confidence to, or it's felt too much like leaving what he values or like who he is in order to stand up for something like this. And like the fact that other people of his peers did that, I think, like, made it safe for him. And that's what we're seeing. I'm pissed at Roon, because honestly, like, Roon and I, like, had something of a friendship because he would...
Made a Twitter friendship, or you knew him personally and knew who he was?
We met on Twitter and we hung out. Like, he revealed his identity to me pretty early. Mm-hmm. And because we did both live in the Bay Area at the time. And I at first kind of thought I was like maybe going to get insider information about OpenAI from him. And like, I'm pretty sure he was also like assessing me. Like, you know, we're kind of like two spies hanging out, you know?
Right.
But like, he is a cool guy. Like, definitely I understand like why people feel like so much affection.
He's got a cool persona. I mean, there's a reason he developed a billion followers on Twitter, you know? Yeah. He's kind of funny and knowing, and like so knowing that like a third of his tweets I don't understand, which may be more of a reflection on my unknowingness than his knowingness. Who knows? But, you know, he's got a real insider vibe. I think he's an important litmus test. I do think he's a canary in the coal mine.
I thought that he was flippable. And I eventually just like kind of into the relationship and blocked him and was like, I'm not following my own advice by like continuing to be friends with you. Like, I'm basically like going easier on you because I think I can flip you. And like, I don't think that that's the right thing to do. I think like the right thing to do is to like be firm in my position about what's right. And then you decide, you know, what you want to do because it's right. Not like because like as a favor to me, because I was nice to you. And I've been pretty annoyed at like how much Rune goes back and forth. I felt like he kind of like dangled in front of me, like that he was conflicted. Like, and so that, you know, like, oh, like, because I think his conscience like would clearly like tremble. And then he would sometimes like come to me about that and kind of like want to talk about it. And then basically as soon as he felt like okay again, he would just go back, you know, to
his his priest, like he would do confession. And you would say you're absolved, although apparently you're saying you're not absolved.
I never said absolved.
Let's absolve him now. Come on, let's come on. The Rune, you're absolved.
But like So I felt that
apparently that's not a unanimous opinion on this podcast. He should be absolved. But go ahead.
I felt taken for a ride. And I felt like with a lot of people from that side, like the thought leaders, like they think of themselves as very thoughtful and like doing the right thing for the world. And so
But we all do, right? I mean, this is the thing, you know, I just saw a tweet from somebody in this context saying, I know all these guys, somebody knows, you know, Sam Altman and Demis and Dario. And he says, they all think that, yes, it's a dangerous technology, but we'll be better off if they're the one who builds it. Now, we know for sure Dario thinks that. I think Demis probably. Sam Altman, I'm not sure. He just may be more cynical than that. He may just be in it for the laughs, but I mean, and various other things, but and the power, But I'm just saying it is a very common thing. I mean, I know you think the people, if these EA people really believe what you thought they believed when you were hanging out with them more, they just wouldn't be working for these companies. What I would say in their defense is people are just so good at convincing themselves, including me, that we're on the side of right. And, you know, if somebody was dangling something in front of me, the equivalent of, you know, the stature and money and everything of being a player at one of these big companies, I could probably find a way to convince myself that I was on the side of God and doing it. You know, I mean,
it still disappoints me. Like,
well, but I mean, you got to take people as they are. Anyway, I mean,
you gotta know. I mean, because people like I obviously I'm different than other people in this way. Like,
I would say that the degree of your public airing of your opinions of people makes you a very appealing podcast guest, but does distinguish you from some other people.
But so obviously I'm different in this way. I also like to, cause like I could have had membership in that world and I said no, cause I thought it was right. And I also thought that like, I thought that we had all like been endorsing values that would lead someone to, I didn't think I'd be standing alone in doing that, you know? And I don't think that that was necessary, but there, anyway, so obviously I'm like an unusual person in this way, but, and I try to talk to other people and kind of like understand like, okay, yeah. Like, for instance, in the sub career incident, which I don't want to talk about too much before overtime.
We can talk about that in overtime. He did a controversial tweet. Leron did a whole Doom debates about it, I think, and we will talk about it. But he's a guy at Google and a prominent guy, and we'll talk about
it. Yeah, so I with that, anytime something like that happens, like people kind of like confront me and say like, you're too angry, you're too hard on people, you know, you got to understand like people are only limited. And I don't know, I just like I want to see the wisdom of that, because I do see like, okay, like that's there's lots of good things about thinking that you're more harmonious, you know. I do want people to get along like urgently in particular ways, but I really don't. I just feel what I really believe is it's all contingent on like where you are in the Overton window. And like, there's a real accounting of like what behavior is good for others in terms of like what they experience on the inside as a result of it. And if you're loyal to that, you're going to be hitting, like, you know, other people have sort of convenient things that they want, you know, out of the current story and what's currently considered okay and what's like supererogatory right now. And I just don't think it's actually too hard. I don't think it was too hard to expect people to say no to like working for the oil company, basically, mm-hmm. you know, but the maneuver, I don't think it was inevitable that.
But like, I there's one other thing I'd say kind of in there. Defense, and then we probably should go into overtime. But there was this sincerely held idea by, you know, as I understand it, people no less sincerely committed to, you know, the movement to avert doom than Eliezer Yudkowsky. I believe a sincerely held view that I'm skeptical of, but that alignment could work, right? Like, if you build the machine, an aligned machine, we're home free. There's a lot of reasons I think that's an unrealistic thing to put your hope in. But it's clearly, you know, you can't say that Eliezer doesn't really believe we have a problem. And you can't say he decided to go to work for the labs and sold out. And that's, and he may have backed off of that hope, but I do think, right, like in the EA community, back when you were more in it and these people were more in it and it was more one happy family before the revolution really took off, the AI revolution, this was commonly held, right? So you can imagine these people thinking, yeah, okay, well, Dario's the good guy who wants to align AI very sincerely. Sam is not. I'm going with Dario and we'll save the day, right? I mean, that would be a continuous, you know, kind of trajectory of thought, right?
I call this kind of reasoning the anthropic defense, because this is basically like what they will say. Like, I think it is our generation's just following orders, Eichmann, Nuremberg defense. Like, that.
That's kind of harsh.
Imagine a way that it could be good given the certain circumstances. And if you can imagine that somebody just believes they're doing the right thing, that's enough. But they don't even have to believe it. And there's no test of that. And they don't want to be tested on that. It's just the idea that they could is enough to excuse them. They could genuinely believe that working on AI is the right path and that that's like the best chance to save us. They could believe that the Chinese will just do it anyway and they'll beat us and we're so neck and neck with them that we just have to go as fast as possible and cross lines that they knew were lines, like recursive self-improvement. They knew that was a line. Nobody ever was like, maybe in the future we'll get good recursive self-improvement. Everybody was always like, no, that would be like, oh, just crazy. Like, that would be like an absolute red line. Like, they thought the red line was going to be if the AI could get out of the box. And that was just, and like, the truth was that Sam Altman will just put it on the internet, you know, and push integrations of it with everything. They knew, they knew what they were doing. And I think you can tell a story and there is a truth where like people don't want to feel bad about themselves and they seek validation from others who do the same thing and they come up with stories that justify it. But like, I do think that whether people will always live up to this, I do think we're responsible for seeing beyond that. Like, well, I could have seen it as good. Because I don't think they really did. I think they were aware of selfish glory motives being a big part of it. The fact that it was so much more fun to work on machine learning than it was to do what AI safety meant before, which was like grinding it out with game theory and realizing that maybe this whole idea of alignment, like, really didn't hang together. They wanted to work on it. And like people like Dario just gave them like just enough of a justification and took the blame, you know, allowed them to just be following his orders. And like, and then we pretty quickly got here. That's what I think of that. And then I see in that kind of interpretation, I see like this letter as sort of a concession. Like they're seeing that there's going to have to be some slowdown, either like they are not going to be allowed to just race or they're not going to be able to. Perhaps part of the backstory of this is like China and distillation and realizing that like if the US won't like stop China from distilling models, then like they're going to lose their business model anyway. And like, I don't know. Yeah. There's a lot of things going on here, but there's sort of a, I see this as like a enough of a concession to like keep the legitimacy of their story for people for whom it's really straining to breaking. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I do think that that is still a story that probably doesn't lead to good things for the world. And it's something that they're responsible for seeing through still.
Yeah.
But nobody will be forced to, as long as it's not common knowledge that they were just wrong. And, you know, you can pause, and as long as it's not common knowledge that, you know, they didn't have a good enough story to pass muster with themselves. Like they could have been doing it for good reasons.
Okay. Having done my best to mount a defense of sorts for some of these people, let me, before we go into overtime, I want to say one thing that's kind of cynical about Anthropic. And then in overtime, I want to say another thing that's kind of cynical about Anthropic. But the thing I want to say now is the, it's like this line: we request that the U.S. government support an international effort to develop the technical and governance tools needed to deliberately pace the frontier of automated AI development. Now, automated is a funny word to throw in because you don't have to. Like, right? If you want to slow it down, you can just slow it down. And if I were going to, I'm wondering whether in the negotiation of language to get as many prominent people on board as possible, I really wonder whether that's a line to appeal to appease Dario and maybe some others. And here's why I say that. My reaction, so the recursive self-improvement paper in early June, Anthropic, there were authors, Jack Clark, the voice in some ways of Anthropic aside from Dario. And there was another author too, but you know, it was a good paper saying, with each generation, the AI is playing a larger role in the creation of the AI, not just coding, but actually conducting experiments, even starting to conceive of experiments. So we could get to this point of recursive self-improvement. And at that point, things could get out of control. We may not get there, but in case we do, we think, you know, we should start thinking about maybe there could be a time to slow down. So Anthropic is going to do this study or set up a committee, basically, or something. You know, we're going to do the fine. But I thought what was disingenuous about that, what I thought was arguably a cynical PR play, was to set up recursive self-improvement per se, right? Like no humans in the loop, right? Like the true sci-fi scenario of the AI just keep building better versions of itself, making that the threshold. Whereas I personally think before you get there, society's going to be falling apart from the destabilization caused by this thing on a lot of fronts, unless we have true international governance. And for various reasons I could get into. So I really stand by that. I think to buy the idea that, well, as long as we stop before recursive self-improvement, things will be okay. No, I don't think so. I think a lot of bad things could happen at the same time. And look, this technology can bring a lot of good stuff. It's true. You can imagine us handling it very wisely and getting the benefits and slowing down to the extent that we need to, maybe even stopping at some point, but doing it wisely. That could all work out, but I'm wondering what you think. Like the recursive self-improvement, I just think is overemphasized as this like distinct threshold, right? It's like, because the acceleration is going to get so fast before the last human is actually out of the loop, right? I mean, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah. Well, I think that this problem has plagued the entire like discussion from like 2023, where basically like a lot of people are skittish and they kind of just, they want like, okay, like what's the line where like everybody will agree with me basically. Like this is why people have such a like macabre desire for what they call warning shots, like a small AI disaster that basically just gets everyone on the same page and like proves that the AI safety people were right. Now we should do what they want rather than having to just work to convince people before, you know.
Right. And we should say these things. We should say these things I mentioned, both Mythos and the ChatGPT escape, are being called warning shots of, I guess, kind of the ideal kind in the sense that nobody died, so far as we know. But anyway, go ahead.
But I mean, many people will say things like there needs to be blood for it to really work. And I just think, like, what are you saying? Like, first of all, okay, if an event did happen where there was blood, how do you think you would feel about wishing for that to happen? You know, come on. Like, that's just so callous, basically, to say, like, somebody should die to make my job easier of protecting their lives. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But so I really think it's like, it's nasty the way people talk about warning shots. But what they want from warning shots is that, like, coordination, and everybody knows. And especially the people, like the kind of people signing this letter, are cowardly in this way. They really don't want to go anywhere on their own. And they want to have a guarantee that, like, okay, everybody agrees. Like, nobody will tell me, like, I stop too soon if I stop at merely automated research and not RSI, you know? They want to know, like, for a fact, they picked the right place. Like, literally something that people don't say this as much anymore, but they used to say something like, well, it's like we're approaching a cliff, but we need to get as far as we can, you know, like right up to the edge of the cliff before we stop.
And why is that? Why do they say that? Well, you know what? We should actually go into overtime. So, because where are we? Like 15-minute mark, and we want to leave plenty of time to talk. So, overtime is for paid subscribers of the Non-Zero newsletter. There's a link in the show notes. Or you can go to nonzero.org and just click on this post. And then you will have magical access to all overtimes of all podcasts. Before we go, anything... well, first of all, anything you want to say... promotionally, like for Pause AI, is there a place people can go to sign up or anything? Anything you want to say about or your Twitter feed or whatever? And
you can check out everything to do with Pause AI US at pauseai-us.org. So things you can check out there. You can take action immediately. You can use our call to action forms to contact your members of Congress in just a few minutes about the bills that we endorse and the issues that we've raised. And you can get more involved too. So one way to get more involved is we're running our second national conference, PauseCon DC 2, in September. And you can sign up. You can apply. You know, we have an application banner on our website for that. And you can always apply to be a local leader if you want to lead a Pause AI US group and local group and have it lead the social activities and the our advocacy activities that we have our leaders do, like getting the word out. So you can do that all on the website. Should be clear. You can also, if you want to hear more from me, you can, it should be in our media tab on the website. You can also just look for me on YouTube, and I have a playlist of all of the podcasts like this that I've been in. And that's what I would recommend. I am going to talk about my Twitter life, which is rather spicy. Honestly, Twitter's a little bit more of like an inside baseball kind of brawl often than it is, like, I think, great for, like, the general public to just learn about the issue of AI. But if you're interested in that, if you like the kind of stuff we talk about in overtime, for example, then you might like to see it.
Okay. Well, so overtime it will now be. Thanks, everybody who followed us this far. I do hope you'll follow us into overtime, because if you think Holly is spicy in the first 45 minutes... we'll see. I'll try to lure you into saying something deeply regrettable. But I doubt.
I usually don't regret what I say.
That's one thing about you. I don't think you're regret prone. But look, that could be because
you get hangovers from the whole thing. So like, even if I think I'm right at just going far enough that like enough people are angry, like does like,
it doesn't burden someone. The entire world hates you. I know that feeling. Okay. So we're going into overtime. Hope to see you there.